Hello and welcome to another episode of the We Have a Meeting podcast. So today we're joined by a very wise man when it comes to the world of B2B and marketing. So if you work in sales and you haven't heard of the company Cognizant, then I'm going to say it, you're probably living under a rock. If you aren't familiar, Cognizant define themselves as the leader in sales intelligence. So think contact details and intent used by 1,800 plus companies. We're big advocates of the software, and it's a key driver when it comes to having conversations with the right people at the right time. Today, we're very, very lucky to have the VP of marketing from Cognizant. It's Liam Bartholomew. Liam, how are you?
Hi, guys. Yeah, really good. Thanks. I'm very happy to be here too.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us. So we're advocates of Cognizant. We don't skip around it. There are probably some podcast hosts that remain impartial. We use Cognizant. We love it. We think it's great. So we thought, who better to get on the podcast to talk about all the wonderful things it does. So Liam, we start our podcast in the same way every time. So we're going to hit you with our favorite question. Who are you and what problem do you solve?
So Cognizant is a B2B contact data platform and sales intelligence solution. And what we really do is help you get in contact with your ICP and target market by giving you the contact details and company information that you need to do so. So email addresses, phone numbers, intent behind buying decisions, as well as lots of other different triggers that can enable you to reach the people at the right time when they're ready to buy and when you're looking for them as well. So, yeah.
Good. And what problem do you solve for Cognizant?
Personally, me. Sorry. Yeah. So my role is basically all around creating running the marketing team and creating. Originally, I moved into the role as campaign marketer, and then worked my way up to head of demand generation, and now VP of marketing. So I was very focused on new business and generating new business for Cognizant through marketing in the demand gen role. Which we contribute over 55% of all new business via the marketing channel for Cognizant. Now I've extended a bit further, all over the marketing team, which then means we're not only looking at how we can acquire new customers, but also the best ways to retain and keep them happy too. So not only bringing in new business, but also increasing those retention rates and expanding accounts that we already have. So yeah,
good. And it's an exciting role, I'm sure. And we have lots of different personas, different people listening to the podcast. What kind of symptoms would people be facing where Cognizant would be the prescription, if that makes sense?
Yes, I think it varies, but I think really Cognizant's main, it depends which angle you're coming from, depending what persona you are purchasing Cognizant on, whether you are a sales professional, marketer, or RevOps. But in general, it's being that you want to reach your audience and drive and generate new business and pipeline. So if you're a sales rep, for example, or your sales team, a growing sales team, and you are doing outreach, email outreach or phone outreach, and you basically need to get that data to fuel your sales team to actually reach those prospects, that's when you'd bring in Cognizant to fill your pipe and book meetings and bring in new business. As a marketer, you might be struggling to reach the right audience. And for example, if your company sold exclusively to Salesforce prospects, or people using Salesforce, you need to find that data to be able to create, to be able to target everyone using Salesforce. So you need that technographic data. And then you might be able to layer that into your email campaigns or your ad campaigns. And then if you're in RevOps, you might be looking to keep fuel your sales team with accurate data, keep your data up to date. So Cognizant would be the solution for then getting that data in, keeping your CRM enriched and keeping your entire revenue org happy and healthy. Overall, but as with all tools, you know, it's to look to drive pipeline and revenue. But I think each different area of that go-to-market team can get a massive benefit out of that data. And there might be different symptoms that would lead you to need a tool like Cognizant.
Are you ready for a challenging one?
Yeah.
Right, let's go for it. So you're in one of those funny markets where if people know Cognizant and are aware of Cognizant, they're probably aware of all the other people that you compete against as well. So in terms of your job, which I imagine is a somewhat stressful one when it comes to this, how do you look at the marketing messaging and make Cognizant differentiate itself from all the other competitors out there?
Yes, that is really, really tough and consistently a challenge, actually. What we've really been able to differentiate on is what we would put as data quality. And that's where we really focus. So if you look at other competitors, they might have other bells and whistles to the tool, like an engagement tool to reach out. Or if like other massive competitors have got multiple different like functions that you could get with the main data service platform, maybe like sales, sales intelligence and recording and or like chatbots and things like that. Whereas we're very focused on that one area of data quality. And that's how we position ourselves. So one, as having the most accurate number and most accurate and highest number of mobiles. And then two, being a verifying. So we have a diamond data where we can verify, those phone numbers. And then that data accuracy across all other aspects as well, where we've really focused on getting the email data super accurate, as well as blending in and merging in a ton of different data too, to keep those profiles so correct, so that you're reaching out to the right person at the right time. We've also focused on being some then with that data accuracy, but also breadth and like being a global provider. So we would position ourselves as having the best data in Europe, and having just as good a data as any of the other US providers in North America as well. And we're constantly growing and expanding that data set. So I'd say, yeah, that's our current differentiator, is that rather than being distracted and focusing on a ton of other things, if you want best of class in the industry, then that's what we're sort of aiming to be, and to have that best data set.
And typically when someone purchases Cognizant, obviously it's somewhat similar to what we do in terms of there's a happiness equation of expectations meeting reality will determine probably if you keep using someone. Mm-hmm. So if I've got a hungry sales team or I've got a hungry marketing team, what are some realistic expectations I should have from using Cognizant within 3-6 months compared to starting with I've got nothing at the minute and now I've suddenly got this tool in front of me? What should I be expecting my world to look like?
Yeah, that is tough. And I would be hesitant to ever position it as like an absolute world changer in a tool. I think that's normally the quickest way for people to end up quite disappointed. But I think you can, if you're coming from the place of having nothing, you can immediately expect to obviously be driving way more activity and pipeline. Like depending on the industry, your own setup as well, this is really important. Like data will never just fix all of your problems. If you're not running the right activity, got the right workflows, got the right processes, it won't fix any of the problems. But what it will do is be able to fuel all of those motions. So as soon as you've got those things down, you'll be able to really like accelerate and move forward. So hard one to completely quantify. I think there's a ton of case studies that we'd have where people could quantify it and show like the increases in their conversion rates, the amount of their pipeline that they have associated and tied to Cognizant data. But what it should be able to do is enable you to like carry out all that activity that you might not have been able to before.
Good. I did give you some challenging ones there. It's a good answer. I think for us, in terms of actually using it, we use a few different data providers. Cognizant is the one that we always rave about for all the things that you've said. So in terms of accuracy of data, we're very big on cold calling, so getting hold of people on the mobiles, it's always going to be the best with connection rates and things. And some things I think only exist in comparison. So modern SDRs probably get hired with some expectations around data that maybe me and Jack didn't have when we started in sales 10 years ago. And it's just, there's a laptop, there's a mobile phone, good luck. And we often talk about, we probably got it, what do you reckon, Jack, about 9 months into running the business, but I don't really get how we did it before, because without it, it was just how do we get hold of people? Campaigns didn't work. And now we've got 20 plus clients where we cold call for every sector you can think of, and I don't understand how we would do it without it. So I would agree with everything that you said. Jack, over to you, sir.
Yeah, I was going to say, I remember working on a campaign, and when in the early days, we were talking the first month of the business, one of the clients handed over the data set, and this is something that their assistant had gone out and found themselves, and they wanted me to have book a meeting with the CEO of companies like AXA Insurance. And I dialed, "Hello, you're through to the customer service helpline of AXA." And I was like, "We're good with gatekeepers, but I'm not getting through to the CEO via your switchboard line." So Cognizant has been a game changer. One of the ads, I see it everywhere, Liam, and there's probably a bit of a story behind it, but there's one ad, and I really remember it. It's like a little running emoji, and it's about like when your competitor or when your data provider tells you they're 100% GDPR. Do you know the one I'm talking about?
Oh yeah, there's the one where it says when your competitor says they're like GDPR aligned or something like that.
Yeah. And it's a little emoji, and I see that. I feel like, obviously, because I use Cognizant, it probably follows me around the internet. So what, from your point of view, what digital marketing channels have proven the most effective for Cognizant? And then how do you optimize your presence on these platforms?
Yeah, so I'd say the channel that's most effective and gets like the biggest portion of our budget is LinkedIn. We spend like a large portion of the budget on LinkedIn. Of the paid media budget, it probably gets about actually half. And then following that, and I think that particular ad I keep it follows me around a bit as well, actually. We is on Facebook and Instagram, so we also advertise on Meta. A smaller proportion there, just because it's harder to target B2B professionals due to like Facebook data input that people put in is all, a lot of personal information and therefore harder to target accurately there. And then we also do a lot still on Google and YouTube as well, but Google being more on that, obviously, demand capture side, where we're just trying to capture existing demand that exists, going after sort of those search terms. So when people are like either looking for a competitor or looking for data themselves for a specific reason. And fortunately in our sort of category, there's, you know, people are always searching for data and stuff. So that demand is easy then to capture. So yeah, we built the process of like building out all of the different platforms and all the different like ways that we're advertising has been like huge, to be honest, and it's taken a long time to perfect to where we've got it to now. We run quite a much more complicated version than when I first started. We started off sort of like advertising, I suppose, like a lot of people do, just like putting out ebooks and white papers and taking form and then getting people to complete like a form for those, and then following up on those ebook downloads with sales reps. And now we've moved away from this to give all of like the value that we give on LinkedIn and Facebook up as like completely ungated to influence people. And that means we run like a number of different types of ads that you'll then see. So different thought leadership ads where we maybe promote a video that's like created for the channel, so something maybe from a podcast and it's more thought leadership led. Then we might promote something that we would call, what we call content, which is like a is content with a dotted line back to the products. That might be like cold calling tips or like setting up your email marketing campaign or something like that. Something that we is like a hot like tips and like interesting to your ICP, but ties back to the product. And then we'll also have ads that run on what we call product values. So it's educating, teaching people about the product. And then there's social proof as well. So people talking about social proof and like people saying how much they love the product, different use cases, things like that. And then finally a retargeting layer, which then captures and retargets people who have come and visited the website or interacted with any of those layers. And the reason why we have all of those sort of running at the same time, and you might see some ads then reserved to you from retargeting, or when, especially Facebook's pretty good at when you look at something once for a bit too long, it just goes after you with it. Its algorithm's pretty intense. It's because we just never assume that we know at any one stage where anyone is in the buying funnel. So it's, you know, one day you could wake up and you could be ready to see the Cognizant platform, and that's when the product value ad pops up. Or another time you may be, you know, someone might not be ready to buy or purchase, have no budget at all. But then the thought leadership sort of ad pops up and just really helps them in their day. And then Cognizant's in their mind. And then the next time they go on LinkedIn, they see something about the product and now they're interested. And then when they are ready to buy, we're front of mind and come up. So there's a whole strategy about sort of being everywhere all the time, all at once, and then staying top of mind. So then when people are ready to purchase, they come inbound, which we know converts at a much higher rate than if we just collected contact data and passed it on to the SDR team to try and force people to purchase at that point in time. So that's kind of it in sum very quickly. So I hope that's given some sort of idea of it.
It's good. There's a lot of different things. You see it all over LinkedIn, especially with like the personal branding piece. It's like, are they front of mind? And I think like probably we kept seeing Cognizant pop up. And then when it was a time to, right, we need to do this, we're going to sit down with Cognizant and kind of explore the different options. So going back to that ad then that we spoke about with like the emojis and things like that, what role have you found, because I put that in the humor bracket, what role have you found that humor plays when it comes to your marketing and kind of being a little bit eccentric when it comes to marketing or something outside of the normal guidelines?
Yeah, so I think the key for it is always getting someone to stop in their tracks on the feed and actually not just gloss over it. And a lot of B2B brands, they'll follow like a maybe two boilerplate, you know, template to their brand. It's all stuff that you can just skip over when you're scrolling through. And you don't go to Facebook or LinkedIn to be advertised to. You don't go to purchase. It's not like Google where you're looking for answers. You go because you're either going to network or you want to learn something, or you just want to waste 10 minutes of your day where you don't have to think about, you know, the task at hand. You don't go to purchase. So to get someone to stop and pay attention, you need to arouse like some sort of emotion, inspire them in some way, show them something that's a little bit different. So we like to play with that and, you know, try and capture people's attention, either make them laugh, get them to think about something a bit differently. So we try and test the boundaries there, especially with not just the messaging that we put in, but also the creative. We actually had LinkedIn come in a couple of weeks ago. They have this institute called the, or this club, or this program called B2B Edge. And they do a lot of testing on this. And they realized that they had this study where they showed that, I think it was like something like 77% or somewhere that high, maybe higher, of all ads, the only actual differentiator on whether that ad, like to the amount of pipeline or whether that ad is effective, is media spend. So the actual creative itself is useless. Like you could be running basically a square with your logo in it, and as long as you put media spend behind it, it won't, like unless you put more media spend behind it, it will never be more effective. And then they had different levels of where the creative then could actually contribute up to the effectiveness of it. So most ads out there like are no different basically from them running just a bland picture of their logo with a call to action. which I found really interesting. And that's the whole point of like trying to be a bit different and stand out, arouse that emotion that you can actually, then the creative that you're running is actually, you know, propping up your media spend at the same time.
That is terrifying. You've really like shattered an illusion. How interesting. So what I wanted to ask you is, you've obviously had this really nice linear path to the job that you've got now, where you've not just been hired in to rock the boat. You've really learned how the company works, learned each role to now be in the VP. If you could go back to the start, knowing what you know now, what would you change?
Yeah, that's actually difficult, because there's some stuff that I'm always questioning whether was that an important part of the evolution, or when I start off how I did it now. So like we set up in one system of like this with the whole lead gen element, where we were collecting, where we were like running these white papers, and set up a system in that way where we then had MDRs that we followed up on those leads. Obviously when we switched to the demand gen approach that we take now, that was a hefty switch. And maybe if I could start out, I would start exactly as we do now. However, I think there was like an important lesson to be learned in that. I think one of the things I would definitely do, and I always think about this one, is if I start out scratch and thinking about the team, I would definitely have more, like have put an immediate resource into marketing ops. Scaling a marketing team built on my own operation practices got us so far, but then you have to undo everything that that you thought was good when someone actually much more experienced is comes in and does it. And that actually, just having like those basic foundations, helps you build for success. I think that would be one of the main big changes. But I think everything else is really just to always be maintain being open to new ideas and getting the right knowledge in when you need it. I think some of our biggest growth parts is when we've taken in some external help, like just new ideas, you know, an external voice, someone, consultants to come in and you know, pick apart what we don't know. And I think that's been like one of the things that I would definitely always take in. As soon as you're like feeling vaguely stuck, or not even stuck, comfortable, just bring someone else in to sort of tear it up a bit, so that you keep moving forward.
Could you maybe give us an example of when that happened, when you brought in an external voice and they challenged a perspective and something changed?
Yeah, I mean, we've done that loads actually now. So I think when moving from this lead gen to demand gen, we brought in Refine Labs, an agency that's run by Chris Walker. He, like, if you don't follow him on LinkedIn, he's super interesting, and talks like, has quite radical radical beliefs on like how you should run marketing in comparison, I suppose radical in comparison to like what the majority of the market's doing. We worked them in, that helped us, I think, move to that next level of scale and really like put marketing at the table when we're talking as a revenue generator. We worked with Gaetano Donati, who really helped us, I think, change around our whole focus on SEO and how we run that strategy. And we're implementing a strategy called Money Keywords. We kind of did that all this year and the big end of last year. And I think we maybe hit like a point where we didn't know where that was going so much. It was like the strategy was kind of like floating around, and then we've got real vision with that. And at the beginning of the year, we also worked with Todd Clouser, who is at Lavender, does quite a lot of funny different skits actually there. So some of the sales audience might know him. And then Abed Durrani works at Hockey Stack, and they had the whole content strategy called Easy Mode, which basically helps what we call fuel our media machine. So everything, all of the good content that we put out, but it gave us structure to that. So we were able to implement that at the beginning of the year, and work through that. So I think, yeah, they're probably like the three things where we've had like real external advice. And from that, we still have them in the network, you know, and they're still really helpful, and I still work with, like, very closely with Gaetano, and still still have good contacts with Refine Labs as well.
It's great that you're open to new ideas, and I think that's for any business leader or any marketer. It's like it's not being afraid to open those other doors. I've got a bit of a challenging question, and you can feel free to say no. But when I'm talking to companies and doing a bit of sales training or consultancies, and Cognizant comes up or competitors, one of the things they typically ask me is, how does it work? What are the secrets? Can we pull back the wizard's curtain and see what's actually happening behind? Obviously, I know that you probably can't go too much into it, but from like a data privacy angle, from like a compliance concerns, obviously you're doing everything above board. Like you're the leader in your market, so there's nothing to hide. But like for somebody listening, being like, I want to do this, but I'm maybe a bit nervous around that. Could you explain a little bit how that works?
Yeah, I mean, it will probably be a very official response, just because of, to be honest, what I know, and also is true. But we get all the data from various different sources. So we have private sources, which we obviously are through paid agreements and partnerships with different data providers, or people collect different data in different ways. We also have public sources, which I think everyone understands as like freely available data on the internet, and everyone is all of the data companies that are out there are going around and collecting that data. And then there's different proprietary sources that we use to collect our own data as well, in like various different ways, and have different tools that do that. And then I suppose that's the key thing, I suppose, is how you collect your data in like your proprietary way. And that's what actually differentiates everyone from the competitors. I think in general, you can have some private sources where you connect with, like, where you maybe get some sort of data exclusivity, all that public data everyone is going after. But how you collect that data in the proprietary way is actually what helps differentiate you. And like all of the competitors have their own versions of that as well. So and then the thing that we kind of have stuck to is just that we stick to the compliance side, in every single way. So we've always notified our entire database that they sit on it, which is, you know, helps, which is an important step to be compliant with GDPR. We have probably the greatest number of do not contact lists globally that then sit into Cognizant and can help opt people out automatically. So if you're on the TPS in the UK, you get removed. So we take all of that stuff really like super seriously as well. And make sure that we're like compliant absolutely everywhere that we need to be. I think the thing is, if people, when there's large enterprise company, people like companies that are concerned about data practices and things like that, it's always best just to, I think, get in contact. I think when the legal speak starts coming out, it all starts getting proven amongst legal teams. I'm obviously not as super clued up, so I won't go talking about stuff that I'll just put my foot in it and get it completely wrong.
it was a good answer, Liam. You did well on the spot. I feel like I'm a real sales geek, and when it comes to like tech and Cognizant and things like that, I feel like I could talk about it all day. But I'll leave you with one last question. It's a double question, so feel free to take it where you want. But I guess with the world of sales changing, we see all of this lovely news on LinkedIn every day about emails and Google and Yahoo, and I'm sure there's going to be more laws that come into play over the next decade with data and different rules when it comes to cold calling and emailing. What do you see as the future for cold outbound or outbound, and what do you see as the future for Cognizant?
Yeah, I think this is really interesting. Like, as that recent rule with that Google put out, right? I think it's about, you know, basically blocking people who send over 5,000 emails in a day. Like, to me, that's just a good thing. So all of those things, all of those measures will actually save cold outreach in my mind. It will push people to measures that like are more effective, maybe one-to-one, and aren't relying on just these tools that are race to the bottom, really. It's just spamming, right? It was like when GDPR came out, really, for the B2C world, it did a great thing because it meant that people actually had to scrub up their email lists and not just rely on that, and be spamming people. And I think it's exactly the same that is happening in B2B. And I think, to be honest, it's only a good thing. I think we'll see what happens on like the, who knows what happened like on the phoning front, but I think, you know, it's not like a hugely used tool, really. I don't think enough people do cold call, and you see in like even countries where regulations are tighter on outreach, like you can still call people in DAC, in like the German regions where there's like double opt-in on emails. Like, I think calling is essential for business, and is like, we'll always be around for that. And then when it comes to data and the email data, even if you can't email people, you can use that data in other ways. So, and creating like match rates for ad platforms, so you can use like large portion of data to create audiences then in your like in LinkedIn, Facebook, other ad platforms, which means you're not actually emailing them. You don't have to use that data in that way. You can also use it just to enrich your existing data and actually send really crafted personal emails that are like, you know, fewer in number but more effective. So I think there's all the changes that will happen, and on this are probably going to be for the better. And actually, if you're taking care and running decent outbound, decent strategy, then you're not going to fall foul of it. It's not going to be an issue. But if you're just spamming prospects and racing through all of your data with poor outreach, then yeah, it might be something that then comes to affect you. But I would question how effective your strategy is if that's what you're running anyway.
Good. A very good answer, Liam. And I think probably the thing I'm going to take from that answer was that not enough people are cold calling and more people need to pick up the phone. So good answer. Brilliant. Liam, if people want to check you out, if they want to find out more about what you do, or they want to use Cognizm, unfortunately, we're not one of those podcasts that has a code saying WAM23, use Cognizm, maybe one day. We're big advocates of it. We reckon you should get it if you are struggling to get in front of people. Where should people check you out, Liam?
I'm on LinkedIn doing bits of posting where I can, being harassed by the team to make sure I do all my posting on behalf of the Cognizm and myself. We also host like a marketing podcast for any people who are interested in marketing called The Loop, which I've run a few episodes with, but some of the other people in my team, including Fran Langham and Chambert Becker, are the hosts on there. So you can come listen to us there as well. And yeah, and if you want to check out Cognizm, yeah, just best to visit the website at cognizm.com. And yeah, check out all of our content. We've got like tons of sales content as well. So well, we do a lot of work with Morgan Ingram, and he's great. So yeah, come check us out.
Good stuff. We'll put all the links below. Liam, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Liam.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, guys.